10. Then at 11, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, a look at the situation in Venezuela. Thank you to KBOO members for your generous support. If you're not one, please go to kboo.fm and click on Donate and support to get, and you get your donation matched today. So go to kboo.fm and have your donation doubled, matched today. This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Real Music Film Festival through February 16th at the Whitfield Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. On Thursday, January 31st, the Real Music Festival will screen the documentary Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band. This film investigates the history and present-day atmosphere of this special art form. Again, that's the Real Music Film Festival showing Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band on Thursday, January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Whitsell Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Thanks for joining me. I have been witness over the last few months to the real effects of human solidarity under bleak conditions. My dear friend Lynn, who long graced these airwaves with Ani and the positively revolting interview and talk segment on Friday mornings, has died. As her condition worsened over the months, a collective formed of her friends, setting up eventually a 24-hour hospice so that she could pass peacefully in her own home with her friends in familiar surroundings and with her delightful fluffy orange cat. We watched her. We brought her medications and food. We cleaned her, changed her bedclothes, listened to her suffering, and comforted her whenever we could. It was a draining effort for all of us. But we are now all stronger with the knowledge that we can together do great things, even very hard things that we have to learn as we go. We also held up each other. And I was very proud to be a part of that. I think that this society teaches us to pretend that we can stand alone to the end, and that we're somehow more pure or virtuous if we do, but it's a sham. It's a lie intended to separate us into profitably divided lives. We are better than that, as I saw with my own eyes these past few months. From Radio Havana, Venezuela's envoy to the United Nations says the United States is preparing for a military invasion of his country. Amid Washington's recent move to impose sanctions on the state-owned oil firm in its harshest financial challenge yet to President Nicolas Maduro. Jorge Valero, Venezuela's permanent ambassador to the UN, made the comment at the UN-sponsored conference on disarmament in New York on Tuesday, questioning whether U.S. President Donald Trump's administration had the moral authority to impose a dictate on Caracas. Valero's remarks were in direct response to the U.S. Deputy and Ambassador to the UN, Cynthia Plath, who said minutes earlier that Washington was, quote, committed to holding accountable those responsible for Venezuela's tragic decline, end quote. U.S. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham recently revealed in an interview with HBO that Trump had asked for his opinion about using military force in Venezuela against Maduro. The South Carolina senator added that he had urged Trump to be cautious since the military intervention in the South American country could be problematic. And speaking for myself, yeah, it certainly could be for the U.S. There have been growing tensions, Radio Havana Cuba writes, in the wake of a move by Washington to lead the charge to recognize opposition figure Juan Guaido as Venezuela's president over the incumbent Maduro and calling on other countries to follow suit. 35-year-old Guaido, an unknown figure until recently, proclaimed himself interim president of Venezuela on January 23rd. Minutes after the bizarre move, Donald recognized him as the leader of the country. Britain, Germany, France, and Spain have already given an 8-day ultimatum to Caracas that they would also recognize Guaido as president if Maduro failed to call a new election within the same period, within the given period. On Saturday, Venezuelan Foreign Minister Jorge Arreaza lambasted that ultimatum as childlike. The same day, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo urged the world to support Guaido and reject Maduro and his mayhem. Other countries, including Russia, Turkey, China, and Iran, have expressed support for the elected government in Venezuela and condemned outside interference in the country, and I might add Mexico to that list. Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro rejects an ultimatum made by a number of European countries that calls for a new election in the Latin American state. On Monday, Washington put further pressure on Maduro's government when U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin jointly announced that the U.S. had blocked all assets of the state-owned oil company in Venezuela under its jurisdiction and banned deals with the firm. Furthermore, the U.S. State Department on Tuesday announced that it had certified the authority of Guaido to control certain assets held by the Federal Reserve Bank in New York or any other U.S. insured banks, describing his self-proclaimed presidency as the legitimate government's. So that's on radio. If you want to read Radio Havana Cuba's scripts, pull up radiohc.cu, and if you prefer to read them in English, put /en. I guess it's backstroke EN. There's more information on Venezuela from The Intercept, an article by John Schwartz, and he's talking about Elliot Abrams, who's been assigned to attack Venezuela. And I say he's been assigned to attack Venezuela because that's all that Elliot Abrams ever does. That's what he's for. Schwartz writes, on December 11, 1981, in El Salvador, a Salvadoran military unit created and trained by the U.S. Army began slaughtering everyone they could find in a remote village called El Mozote. Before murdering the women and girls, the soldiers raped them repeatedly, including some as young as 10 years old, and joked that their favorites were the 12-year-olds. One witness described a soldier tossing a 3-year-old child into the air and impaling him with a bayonet. The final death toll was over 800 people. They wiped out the entire village. The next day, December 12th, was the first day on the job for Elliot Abrams as Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights and Humanitarian Affairs in the Reagan administration. Abrams snapped into action, helping to lead a cover-up of the massacre. News reports of what had happened, Abrams told the Senate, were not credible, and he said the whole thing was being significantly misused as propaganda by anti-government guerrillas. This past Friday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo named Abrams as America's special envoy for Venezuela. According to Pompeo, Abrams will have responsibility for all things related to our efforts to restore democracy in the oil-rich nation. And you can put the words restore democracy in scare quotes, of course. Very scary quotes. The choice of Abrams, they write, sends a clear message to Venezuela and the world. The Trump administration intends to brutalize Venezuela while producing a stream of unctuous rhetoric about America's love for democracy and human rights. Combining these two factors, the brutality and the unctuousness, is Abrams' core competency. Abrams previously served in a multitude of positions in the Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush administrations, often with titles declaring their focus on morality. First, he was Assistant Secretary of State for International Organization Affairs in 1981, and then the State Department human rights position mentioned previously, Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs, 85 to 89, Senior Director for Democracy, Human Rights, and International Operations for the National Security Council from 01 to 05, and finally, Bush's Deputy National Security Advisor for Global Democracy Strategy in 05 to 09. In these positions, Abrams participated in many of the most ghastly acts of U.S. foreign policy for the past 40 years, all the while proclaiming how deeply he cared about the foreigners he and his friends were murdering. Looking back, it's uncanny to see how Abrams has almost always been there when U.S. actions were at their most sordid. Abrams, a graduate of both Harvard College and Harvard Law School, joined the Reagan administration in 1981 at age 33. He soon received a promotion due to a stroke of luck. Reagan wanted to name Ernst Lefevre as Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights and Humanitarian Affairs, but Lefevre's nomination ran aground when two of his own brothers revealed that he believed African Americans were inferior intellectually speaking. That's a quote. Disappointed Reagan was forced to turn to Abrams as a second choice. A key Reagan administration concern at the time was Central America, in particular the four adjoining nations of Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, and Nicaragua. All had been dominated by tiny, cruel white elites since their founding, with a century's worth of help from U.S. interventions. In each country, the ruling families saw their society's other inhabitants as human-shaped animals who could be harnessed or killed as needed. But shortly before Reagan took office, Anastasio Somoza, the dictator of Nicaragua and a U.S. ally, had been overthrown by a socialist revolution. The Reaganites rationally saw this as a threat to the governments of Nicaragua's neighbors. Each country had large populations who similarly did not enjoy being worked to death on coffee plantations or watching their children die of easily treated diseases. Some would take up arms and some would simply try to keep their heads down, but all from the perspective of the cold warriors in the White House were likely communists taking orders from Moscow. They needed to be taught a lesson. The extermination of El Mozote was just a drop in the river of what happened in El Salvador during the 1980s. About 75,000 Salvadorans died during what's called a civil war, though most all the killing was done by the government and its associated death squads, and I might add, the associated U.S.-trained and U.S.-funded and U.S.-directed death squads. The numbers alone, they write, don't tell the whole story. El Salvador is a small country, about the size of New Jersey. The equivalent number of deaths in the U.S. would be about 5 million. Moreover, the Salvadoran regime continually engaged in acts of barbarism so heinous that there is no contemporary equivalent, except perhaps for ISIS. In one instance, a Catholic priest reported that a peasant woman briefly left her three small children in the care of her mother and sister. When she returned, she found that all five had been decapitated by the Salvadoran National Guard. Their bodies were sitting around a table with their hands placed on their heads in front of them, as though each body was stroking its own head. The hand of one, a toddler, apparently kept slipping off her small head, so it had been nailed onto it. At the center of the table was a large bowl full of blood. Criticism of U.S. policy at the time was not confined to the left. During this period, Charles Meachling Jr., who had led State Department planning for counterinsurgencies during the 1960s, wrote in the Los Angeles Times that the U.S. was supporting mafia-like oligarchies in El Salvador and elsewhere and was directly complicit in the methods of Heinrich Himmler's extermination squads. So I'll skip forward on that article, but Elliot Abrams being put in charge of the Venezuela situation is a cue that blood is to flow. And that article is quite lengthy. The time is 9:12. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. And I also want to ask you what you think of the, I'm not happy that the presidential campaigns are run the way that they are in the United States. It's far too long, but I have to accept that the process has already well begun. And I have to ask you what you think of Bernie Sanders running or of one of the other supposedly more left Democrats running. I'm wondering, what are your feelings already on that? There's an article in Jacobin about trying to make the case that Sanders should be seriously considered as a presidential candidate because the writer, James A. Smith, feels it was a mistake to marginalize Corbyn, and that they could have made more progress if they had not done so. If I read part of the article, it starts, from the other side of the Atlantic, the British left watches the Democrat 2020 primary field take shape with a sense of deja vu. The impossible has been done. On healthcare, climate change, and inequality, the protest fantasies of yesterday are, we are assured, the party dogmas of now. Centrists no longer get to tell the left what's popular and what isn't. Capitalist realism, if not broken, is at least looking a bit scuffed and shopworn. When Bernie Sanders launched his first presidential campaign in 2015, no one thought it would achieve such change in the language of the Democratic Party and in American politics. But now, in the calm of decision and with a second Trump administration at stake, progressives are wavering about whether it's time for Sandersism without Sanders. Time, that is, for a candidate who absorbed Bernie's progressive agenda, but one younger with less of the battle damage of years of activism, less free with the S word, less white and male, and less needlessly antagonizing to the Clintonites in the party. Pardon me. Frederick Jameson and Slavoj Žižek refer to the figure of the vanishing mediator, who, like Mary Poppins or Alhambra in Ollie Smith's novel The Accidental, completely transforms a situation in the action of entering and then withdrawing from it. It took this cool old guy to give the left its confidence back, but isn't it time he accepted this function of temporary catalyst and made his way for another candidate? They ask this rhetorically, of course. The lesson from the UK is, they write, we've been there, don't do it, Bernie needs to run. In the weeks following Britain's 2016 EU referendum, Jeremy Corbyn's leadership of the Labour Party was hollowed out by a succession of resignations from his shadow cabinet and a vote of no confidence from members of Parliament. Most of the parliamentary Labour Party, the PLP, had been appalled at the old socialist backbencher foisted on them as leader by party members in the previous year. Now, in the confusion of the defeat of the Remain campaign, they had a pretext to act. Pleading his continued support among the membership, Corbyn scandalized the PLP and commentariat by refusing to resign, forcing the party establishment to move awkwardly behind one and then another underprepared challenger in a new leadership contest. Pandering to the newly radicalized membership, the challengers paid tribute to Corbyn's policies and claimed that they intended to continue his anti-austerity project to the point of inventing an honorary role of party president for him and offering an, in effect, Corbynism without Corbyn. Like American progressives today, in other words, the British left was faced with the dilemma of whether to embrace the policy gains made under Corbyn's surprise ascendancy, but to accept that his idiosyncrasies as a candidate meant that it was time to move on. As it happens, the decision in the UK case was simplified by the fact that the alternative candidates were far more underwhelming than those Sanders supporters are currently faced with, even if it would be flatly foolish to rush into thinking that most of Sanders' rivals are any more sincere or any less cosmetic than Corbyn's were in their newfound progressivism. There was no question of Labour members taking the bait that time, yet ironically, plenty of us were left uneasy about the fact that we had originally supported Corbyn with precisely such a vanishing mediator role for him in mind. So what do you think? The number to call, 503-231-8187. Should Sanders be a vanishing mediator, or should he run for president? Or do you think someone else should run for president? And who do you think has a chance? 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. I also want to talk some more about Venezuela. You've perhaps noticed that the right-wingers often like to say that Venezuela's problems are all because Venezuela is socialist. And that defeating Venezuela is a message, they imply, to leftists in the U.S. that we need to shut up because our flagship, they presume, Venezuela, is going down both economically and, of course, under the upcoming military invasion. Peter Cerdo writes about this in Counterpunch. For some months now, he writes, Venezuela's socialist government has lurched through a series of escalating crises, hyperinflation, mass protests, political violence, while both the government and its opposition have flirted with authoritarianism. It isn't pretty, and to hear the right wing tell it, it's the future the U.S. left wants for our own country, and as if to prevent that, the Trump administration is now fomenting a coup in Venezuela. They've publicly recognized an unelected opposition leader as president, discussed coup plans with Venezuela's military, and sanctioned oil revenues the country needs to resolve its economic crisis. They're even threatening to send U.S. troops. They'll tell you this about restoring democracy. They'll tell you this is about restoring democracy and human rights in a South American country, but one look at the administration officials driving the putsch perishes the thought. Take Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who recently spoke at the United Nations calling on countries to stand with the forces of freedom against the mayhem of Venezuela's government. This fall, the same Pompeo shared a photo of himself beaming and shaking hands with Saudi Arabia's crown prince, just as the prince's order to kill and dismember a U.S. resident journalist was coming to light. The same prince is carrying on a U.S.-backed war in Yemen, where millions are starving. Does this sound like a man who gives one fig for democracy or against mayhem? I have to stop because it reminds me of so much that Saudi Arabia has done, and certainly against GLBTQ people who they simply slaughter. But returning to that article, take Pompeo's point man on Venezuela, the dreaded Elliot Abrams. Pompeo said Abrams was appointed for his passion for the rights and liberties of all peoples. More likely, it was Abrams' history as Reagan's Secretary of Dirty Wars. And that's a real thing people called him. A singularly villainous figure, Abrams vouched for a U.S. backing of a genocidal Guatemalan regime and Salvadoran death squads in 1980s. And when a U.N. report cataloged 22,000 atrocities in El Salvador, Abrams praised his administration's fabulous achievement in the country. That phrase, fabulous achievement, is in scare quotes. Abrams was convicted of lying to Congress about U.S. support for Nicaragua's brutal Contras, but that didn't prevent him from serving in George W. Bush's State Department, which backed not only the Iraq War, but an earlier coup attempt in, you guessed it, Venezuela. It's very nice to be back, Abrams told reporters. Now, speaking for myself, if you watch news on the screen and you've seen pictures of Abrams talking, you've noticed that his face is rather contorted. I remember from way back when I was an anti-imperialist activist trying to counter the U.S. wars in Central America, and Abrams was involved. I remember him as a much younger person. And I see that the contortion of his face is a reflection of the contortion of his personality. It's clear that one hemisphere of his mind is battling with the other, and the man looks like an evil vizier in an opera buffo. You can't miss him. Go ahead and have a good look at his face. That's the face of American foreign policy. We have callers. I'm hoping to talk about Bernie, and we'll go to the first caller. Curry's on the air. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Teresa. This is Kari. Yeah, I'm calling in to talk about Bernie. I do hope that he runs. I think that he really appealed to a wide constituency across the country, and I know that there are many women that are also candidates, potential candidates, and I would love to see a woman run. However, I have real questions about the women who have announced their candidacy. I think they are very neoliberal kind of candidates. They've asked for corporate, kind of support. And I'm also not happy with a Biden idea whatsoever. He's he hides behind his smile, and he's got a lot of his own baggage. So I just wanted to kind of add that to the discussion. I don't have an awful lot of details to add, but I also wanted to give you my... I'm very sorry to hear about Lynn, and I am really grateful that you were there for her.
I was glad to be there. I was honored that she trusted me, and yeah, she was a dear friend, and I'll miss her voice on the air.
I will too. Thank you again.
Thanks for calling. Yeah, should Bernie run? I've got problems with Bernie's, lack of fire about imperialism. I mean, he's not as imperialist as other candidates, but I also very much have a problem with some of the other would-be candidates' casual attitude towards imperialism, which reflects much of the U.S. population after years and years of propaganda inculcation. The idea that imperialism is just somehow normal, and we're just supposed to look the other way as we expend the greater part of our national fortune and even the lives of our children on crushing people around the globe. Why is that normal? It's not normal. It's criminal. As a matter of fact, it's no exaggeration to say it is simply criminal, and we need to stop being criminals. We need to atone. We need to repent and atone for being the criminals of the world with our massive influx, number of bases around the world, close to 1,000 bases, and all of the horror and the bloodshed that we engage in. I'll go to the next caller. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Bart's on the air.
Teresa, I wanted to say Dick Durbin is kind of the model I'm following. A guy who's got a level head. I don't know his history, but for being able to reach a lot of people, I thought we need to look for something like that. I'm not supporting Inslee. Say his experience in transportation is not the best, so therefore, plus the guy who's hauling most oil and coal.
Well, what do you like about Durbin's policies?
No, I don't know enough about him. It's just the way he presents himself as a cool head, not haughty cool, not, you know, casual, relaxed cool, but so he's got a good head on his shoulders, let's say. That shows. I don't know, though. But that's kind of what I'm looking for. Can I just pass that along?
Of course.
And not for Inslee, I'm telling you. No Inslee. All right, thank you.
Thank you for that. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And I was talking about whether Bernie should run, and I was reading from an article in Jacobin saying that from the perspective of the writer in Britain, it's not a good idea to view Bernie as a mediator who simply influences the scene and then leaves. The writer is saying that we should use meaning the left, should use the popularity and the name of Sanders for what it's worth and actually run him for president and get our gains done that way and move our movement forward in that way. And so I'm offering that as a possible tactic. It's not a full-throated endorsement of Bernie Sanders from me, although when, you know, compared with the with his peers, I think he does stand out. And I was also talking about Venezuela. There's still just a moment for you to call in if you want to talk about either topic. This is going to be a 30-minute show, and so it's a one-hour show, and I didn't know it. Okay, great. We have time to talk about these topics. Well, as I was saying, things have been a bit fraught for me, so I hope you'll forgive me for that error. haven't done that for a while. And yeah, this is the last Thursday of the month, isn't it? So this needs to be an hour show. Great. The number to call to talk about Bernie Sanders and or Venezuela. And now you have time to do it. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Continuing with that article, for all its faults, Venezuela achieved tremendous things before the current crisis, including drastic reductions in poverty and improvements in living standards. Mismanagement and repression may have imperiled those gains, but that's no justification at all for the U.S. getting involved. In fact, U.S. sanctions have worsened the economic crisis, I might add, intentionally, and U.S. coordination with coup plotters has poisoned the country's political environment even further. The future of Venezuela's revolution is for Venezuelans to decide, not us. All that can come of more intervention now is more crisis and maybe even war. Instead of regime change, the U.S., and especially progressive politicians, looking at you, Nancy Pelosi, should back regional dialogue and diplomacy. While Democratic Party leaders appear to back Trump, a few representatives like Ro Khanna and Ilhan Omar are bravely backing a diplomatic course. For all the right's warnings that the left wants to turn the U.S. into Venezuela, we should pay careful attention to what the people who gave guns to death squads and destroy the Middle East want to do with it, because unlike the left, they're already running our own country. So that, again, was Eric Dratzer's article in Counterpunch. And I invite you to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. The other question pending, should Bernie Sanders run for president again? And I'll go to the next caller. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. I feel really strongly that Bernie should run, and my main reason is that it feels like the stage, i.e. the planet, whereupon all of these really important issues, the imperialism and corporate world that we've created, all of that stuff, none of it can really be resolved or solved if we don't have a planet. And with this whole 12-year thing, I have young kids, and I'm thinking, why isn't everybody focused on finding a candidate who's really screaming about climate crisis? It seems to me like if we don't have a planet, we can't fix all of the things that we're working on. You know, we all have to play, you know? And I'm just, for me, he's the only one who really seems to really speak about it in a clear, strong way.
Well, you know? That's, yeah, that's interesting to hear.
That's my main thing. And I also, he's the only one who, you know, he got such a groundswell of people and then just went quietly back to work, going after Amazon, going after Walmart, just quietly back to work. And I just see a lot of other politicians doing a lot of grandstanding and talking, but not as much real, just nuts and bolts getting down to it.
Well, I don't want to re-litigate the Bernie Hillary
fight,
but the reason I could not get the main reason I could not get excited about Hillary does go back to imperialism. She is more than a casual imperialist. She really believes in it and considers it part of her core competency. And she is a competent woman, in my opinion. She would push forward U.S. wars and probably win them if that, you know, if you can use that term for bloody episodes of mass murder. The winner is whoever gets to steal the oil, I guess. But that's not acceptable to me.
She was also open to fracking. You know, when it became clear that it was just time to let that stuff go, she was still like, well, I'm thinking about it.
It's what we get. You know? It's what we begin to find acceptable. It's like the things that have come to the middle are things that are really rabid and heinous. I mean, like fracking, like anything but an absolute World War II-like mobilization to reverse global climate change is... It's just nuts not to do that, but that's normal. That's the middle, you know.
Right, and that's like what AOC was saying in that climate town hall that Bernie had with and AOC was there. I'm sure you've seen her whole, you know, we've got to treat this like a new Green Deal. We've got to like mobilize the masses and treat it in that way. And I'm still sort of amazed why I'm a parent of two kids, and I'm thinking, why aren't all the parents in the whole country just up in arms? This is 12 years we've been told now. Like, do we really think that this stuff that's going on with the polar vortex isn't connected? You know, what's going on?
I'm
still sort of amazed at the willingness to get distracted by every other thing. I mean, Trump is awful. It is time to get him out of there, you know.
I'm glad you brought up the New Green Deal, however you want to call it. There's an article in, EE News says that Senator Bernie Sanders is plotting an aggressive course on climate change in the new Congress. An aide said that his staff is working on a broad piece of climate legislation for introduction early in the new Congress and what would largely be a messaging effort to lay groundwork for 2020 when Democrats could control the Senate and the White House. While it's not clear that the legislation would be explicitly associated with the Green New Deal platform being pushed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, it would share many of the same principles. That includes a transition to 100% renewable energy and big investments in clean energy technology and green infrastructure. The aide said it has the aroma of a Green New Deal, so it sounds like he's pushing towards something similar. Of course, I wouldn't want to accept a watered-down version, but he's working on something like that.
I have faith that he's not interested in watered down versions. Just when I hear him speak about it, it's pretty full throated, you know. So I think it won't be watered down. But I agree with you. My only reservation with him is the imperialism and the militarism, that I don't think he comes out hard enough. But I do think that his positions on corporate America and, you know, Fight for 15 and all that stuff, he's in so many of the right places all the time and just continues to keep his head down and work, you know, like actually work, which I don't feel every politician is doing, you know.
There was a great deal of energy too that I noticed with the Sandernistas when I was at the Democratic convention in 16. There was a difference in the group. I mean, there was enthusiasm among the Hillary supporters for the idea of a woman president.
Right.
As
but
I
not
said,
the
it was.
Policies. You could never get them into a real conversation about the specifics
of
policies.
Yeah, that was funny. It was like they're willing to be blind about that. It's like, it's okay. It's going to be okay to mass murder Afghanis and Syrians, et cetera, as long as we get a woman president. And I found that to be an immoral stance. Right. And
yeah,
whereas
my mother in law used to say during that whole time, she said, you know, yeah, she's a woman, but what kind of a woman? Do we want to go any further? Can we find out more details about her?
Yeah, I think we're being offered new Hillarys. I think that we're being offered new Hillarys in that regard.
Right, exactly. And everyone's just supposed to pretend like, oh, yeah, we don't know anything else about Kamala Harris. She's a woman. Let's go. Everything else doesn't matter. And it's sort of, that's why the only thing that worries me about the Bernie thing is that I feel like there's a lot of, again, identity politics. They're like, he's a white male and he's old. He's got three strikes against him. Just let it go. Come on, that Hillary Bernie thing is over. And it's like, well, but you're not looking at the policies and what could happen here.
That's what the writer from Jacobin is saying, is stick to the flag bearer of your policies.
Right. But it's kind of difficult to get people into specifics of that. They seem to want to do identity politics. And, I mean, isn't that how we ended up with Trump?
Well, there's something to identity politics. I mean, there is some value to it. And Bernie is an old white male, and sometimes it shows. So I'm not going to dismiss that out of hand.
I agree.
But I'm just asking pragmatically, is this a good person to push for the Oval Office because of these policies?
I think my instinct is that all the people who are really super pro, like the serious Bernies last time, would come back, would just come flooding back. That's my guess. But
he does. One thing I like about him is he does seem to be serious about what he's promoting. Unlike, for example, Obama, who, as popular as he was, you remember his bumper stickers used to have peace signs on them. He was the peace candidate, and this just turned out to be an outrageous mendacity. It was peace with Obama, and he was going to be, shutting down Guantanamo and withdrawing the troops in Afghanistan. Well, he didn't do that.
I do remember that, yeah. Yeah, I there was a moment during the Obama thing where I don't know if I can remember exactly what it was, but there was this one moment where I thought, oh, he is turning into a celebrity. He is not a politician right now. He's turning into something beautiful for us to look at, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he is getting into that ego trip thing, and we're losing the work.
Yeah, the phrase "hope for change" changed its meaning to me. It's like, at first it was like, here's our hope, and we'll get him in and get some change. And then later it took on a more cynical tone in my mind, like, you can hope for change, but you ain't getting it.
Right. Yeah, keep hoping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm hoping Bernie runs, but I'm also nervous that it's going to create a Hillary backlash, that people are going to be all bothered by his white maleness. And I just hope that people will be able to listen to the content of what he's proposing and really think about the details.
Well, I appreciate you calling, and I'm glad to get a chance to actually talk these things out. Because, thanks for calling. As we know, the fully corporate-owned Democratic National Committee would much rather you discuss far shallower topics. But the fact is, we really do need that Green New Deal. We need the New Deal because the country is miserably impoverished. I'm trying to put IM in front of both those words. Our impoverishment has led to immiseration there. There, I get to use both prefixes that time. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. The question is, who are you supporting for president, and what do you think of that, that analysis, that since it is Bernie who brought the S word, as they say, socialism, to the point of discussion in American politics, and since he did produce so much change in the platform, isn't it better to run him as president rather than try to have Sandersism without Sanders? And the reason I bring that up is that I think there may be something to it. I think that the Democratic Party is only too happy to run a figurehead to get you all fired up about your issues, especially to get you fired up about your identity issues, sure, about mine. I think I could trust Hillary Clinton to do a much better job on transgender issues than Trump or any Republican, or some of the Democratic candidates for that matter. But, you know, what about murdering people abroad? What about mass incarceration and time to completely reverse that? What about killer cops? You know, these aren't things that, these are things that we legitimately need immediate change on. These aren't things that we should just, these aren't whims that we can sit around and wait for. So I'm not really sympathetic for centrists and centrism, because the center has moved so far to the right that it's unrecognizable. We have a center of horror, so of course we have to move left. What do you think? 503-231-8187. I've got a caller. Hi. Boris is on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Bernie, and then about Elliot Abrams. I did not support Bernie, and I would not support Bernie. I think he's a Democratic operative that's hiding behind a facade of socialism. And the most glaring example of what I'm talking about is John Kerry move, when it was exposed that in fact Hillary was subterfuging his campaign, showed no backbone, and I think it's going to take some pretty severe backbone to stand up and actually institute some of the policies that he claims he's all for. So no on Bernie from this cowboy.
Okay, do you have an alternative?
I don't yet. I'm waiting for more things to shake out. It's getting to be somewhat interesting, so I am kind of paying attention, but no, I don't have one at this point.
I remember the moment that Bernie capitulated. Of course, he always said that he would, and that his his plan was to support the Democratic Party's candidate.
Exactly.
So, and he did follow through with that. But I do remember the emotion that the shock
Well, all his supporters, he sold them out. A lot of people worked really hard on his campaign, and he did the same thing John Kerry did.
I remember people literally grabbing each other in group hugs in the streets of Philadelphia downtown and crying.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, that was not a little thing that he did.
No. As far as Elliot Abrams, I found it very interesting that you commented on his contorted face. Him and Alan Nairn yesterday on Democracy Now! Back in 95 when Alan Nairn was invited for some reason to be on Charlie Rose, and Elliot Abrams was there via a remote screen. And when Nairn challenged him on some of these atrocities that U.S. was supporting in Guatemala, and he was a big part of that, the sneer that came across his face was absolutely chilling.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I wouldn't punch down on someone who's got Bell's palsy or something. I'm talking about that man's face reflects the way he thinks.
It's contorted for a good reason. The man is a psychopathic fiend, and the thing that bothers me even more is that people in this country are not just totally consumed with, you know, outrage over hypocrisy. I can't believe that anybody in this country considers what's going on in Venezuela as legitimate. It's beyond my belief.
Well, I see how it happens. I mean, to the extent that Americans hear anything at all about Venezuela, it's that, you know, failed socialist state with the runaway inflation. They don't know where it is.
They don't know. That's you hit it on the head. Yeah. Well, those are my comments, so I'll let someone else have some time.
Thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Talking about the presidential process, talking about imperialism. And I'll go to the next caller. Lon is on the air. Hi, Lon.
You mean Ron?
Oh, sorry. Hello, Ron.
Okay. Hey, Teresa. Bernie has been behind the issues that he has been promoting on his campaign. He's been behind these issues forever. So there's no question about who Bernie is and what he's about. Second of all, a year before the campaign even started, I'm a truck driver.
Go on. You still there?
Yeah, this is Mike.
Oh, I was talking to Ron, the truck driver, a second ago.
Well, I'm a truck driver, too, but I'm also a musician. But, Teresa, good to get to talk to you. You know, we're going to lose this next election if we don't get really serious and really find a candidate. I mean, Bernie would be great, and Joe Biden would be fine too, but we've got to get behind somebody quick, and we got to get serious. I really believe both parties are complacent. I think they're getting ready to...
We seem to be having trouble with the phone lines right now. So I'm very sorry that it seems like you also got cut off. So we'll just have to... We'll have to try again. Ron, if you'd like to call back in, go ahead. Mike, go ahead and call back in. And you can join Ron and Mike, hopefully. The number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Again, that was not intentional. And... hopefully we'll have a full conversation with the next caller. And we are talking about Venezuela. We're talking about the upcoming presidential election. And as I said earlier, I'm not really happy with the American process on this. It seems to be very long and very shallow when it comes to electing the president. Had someone call earlier who said that he likes someone. And I'm sorry to say this, but it didn't seem to be based on any particular policy. Just thought that he was a good guy. And I would like to see more ideologically driven politics in the United States, and I would like to see that ideology come out of an informed stance on the issues and knowledge of history. Maybe that's a pipe dream. But Bernie supporters did seem to be very educated. That's another thing I noticed about them. Besides being very passionate, very active, they're much more educated on the issues, on what the United States actually does domestically and abroad. And I think that Ron is back on the air. Sorry about that, Ron.
Oh, thanks, Teresa. Yeah, I was going to say that I'm also one of the things I do is drive truck. And a year before the campaign even started, there was this old guy, this old white guy, who stood up in front of the driver's lounge, and I think he did it for my benefit because I was the only black guy in the room at the time. And he said that Donald Trump is going to be our next president, to which I said, BS, so to speak, right? Okay, so what happened was the Republicans really counted on the Dems running Hillary, because it was her turn, right? And that's how they won, because the DNC, being not the really nice guys that we think we want them to be, just kind of kicked Bernie to the side and put Hillary up front, and they lost the freaking election.
It's no exaggeration. I remember, again, going back to the convention, I remember they would go so far as to turn off the lights in the Bernie section and turn off the microphones so that they could not be heard in that vast coliseum when they were cheering or booing. And the attitude after the coronation, as I called it, of Hillary was that, you know, all of these pesky left progressive people need to get out of the way and let us win the election. Well, it was a bad, aside from being rude and unprincipled, it was a bad electoral strategy.
Yeah, exactly. So what happened was the Republican Party set the Democratic Party up, and the Dems fell for it. And, you know, so here we are today, Donald Trump. A lot of those guys, those old white guys I was talking to, said they would have voted for Bernie. So Bernie would have been president, but, you know, the DNC. And I wanted to say, too, about Venezuela, we need to step aside, let the Venezuelans work their own problems out. We have, if I'm not mistaken, sanctioned everything but the oil in Venezuela.
And we just did that. I mean, they are completely locked down economically. We do that, and then we say, look how bad the economics are in Venezuela. It's that socialism.
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, that serves two of their purposes. You know, one is to put Maduro in a bad light, and another is to put socialism in a bad light. Hey, thanks. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks for calling in. All right, the number to call, 503-231-8187. And apologize that we're having a little bit of trouble with the phones, but hopefully we've got it up and running now. Thanks to Clementine, engineer, for fixing things as they bleep around here. Who knows? Who knows what the gremlins do? This is an old studio, but I'll go to the next caller. Todd is on the air.
Oh, hi. I'm thinking that when President Obama put the love wins, I wonder if that hurt the party.
Yeah, I'm sure it hurt it with it hurt it with Trump voters, but that doesn't matter.
What's that?
I'm sure it hurt it with Trump voters. No, that doesn't hurt the party. Tolerance and acceptance of GLBTQ is broadly well accepted amongst Democrats.
Oh, I know. I'm just thinking that since there's an abnormality between homosexual sex, you know, I'm just wondering if that, because love is lovely, and you know, when two men have sex, there's fecal matter involved. I'm just wondering if that.
So you think that your fellow bigots were turned off and didn't vote? Well, that's a good thing. I mean, really don't want bigots to have political power. Need them to educate themselves and understand that their rage and their hatred comes from other sources, most likely their childhood, things that need to be worked out psychologically, not politically. But I'm glad that you could call.
Well, I'm not saying I'm angry. Just, pointing out, don't you think that there's? I mean, they have to shower when they're done having sex. I should say there's something wrong.
Do you think women don't shower after they have sex?
Women as well, yeah. I'm just saying, but a man and a woman when they
okay, I'm not
going to
have
cuddle.
A discussion on the basis of bigoted fantasies about homosexuality.
Why are you afraid?
Oh, I'm quite unafraid, as you'll discover if you
Why
find
can't
me in the
you
street.
Handle the fire. Just deal with it. Don't back
okay.
out. Don't
and that's enough bigotry for KBOO Airwaves for this morning. Number call 503-231-8187 for your comments and questions about U.S. imperialism, the ascension of Elliot Abrams once again to the bloody end of U.S. imperialism. I guess there aren't any non-bloody ends. And to the vanguard, I should put it that way. And what do you think about should Bernie Sanders run for president? 503-231-8187. And I'll go to the next caller. Hi, you're on the air. Hi there, can you hear me?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hey. Yeah, thank you. I do think Bernie Sanders should run. I think he's the only person that has the backbone and the only person out there that really cares. And I think we don't have much time left. Human-caused climate change is at the edge. You know, the edge is here. We're about to go over the tipping point, and we need someone strong. We need a leader who can stand up there and run with the climate change as the front part of his campaign to make people aware.
So you think Bernie is sincere about climate change?
I do. I think he's sincere about all his policies. I think he's a doer. He's not a talker. And we need doers. We need people that are leaders, not sheep that are following the corporate model.
Okay, well, anything further?
Nah, thanks a bunch. I really enjoy all your shows, and thanks for what you do. Take care.
Thanks for calling in. Number call 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and I'll go to the next caller. Jerry's on the air.
Harry.
Harry, sorry about that, Harry.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for taking my call. Maduro could do was, considering Trump said that he was illegitimate and the government was, he should have said the Trump administration is illegitimate because of the election was a farce and that Nancy Pelosi will be the interim president of the United States and we want Americans to go out to the streets and protest.
It would make the same sort of logic.
Yeah, it definitely is. Second is, I haven't heard the Pope stepping in, saying, you know, because what's going on? Because children are malnourished, and they're dying of malnutrition and everything else. And this is a sin. Anyone who wants to do this to these people, they're not doing it to the government. The president of Venezuela is not going to be harmed by that, but the people are. So if anyone who dies because of this, and if you support that, that's a sin. And you, and if you believe in God, you'll be held responsible for this.
So you're saying the Pope should speak out against the sanctions policy?
Yes, he definitely should, because people are dying, you know. So I'm surprised he hasn't, you know. But maybe he has. I just haven't heard about it because, you know, how the American media is. He probably didn't say anything, but I don't know if he has or not. But he definitely has to step forward and wag his finger against Trump, saying no, no, no. The next thing you were talking about, it was Hillary Clinton and the Bernie Sanders, and you were mentioning some of the things that happened in the convention. One of the things is after he conceded to Hillary Clinton, and he came to sit down at a meeting on what to do, the strategies and stuff, they actually had security people remove him by force. And he and when they did that, he says, "Well, I'm not going to be a Democrat anymore. I'm going to go back to being an independent."
Wow.
Yeah. And another thing, couple reasons why Hillary lost was one, during the debate, of course, the Republicans aren't going to mention about Black Lives Matter, and she didn't either. She said black on black crime. And when everyone heard that last debate, when she said that, a lot of black voters decided to stay home. Why? Because she can't even mention Black Lives Matter, what's going on, all the demonstrations, and she couldn't even mention it, and she didn't mention it. So that was one reason. Second reason was, the abortion. When they came out with the 9 months where you can pull a baby out, break his skull and suck everything out before you can kill it, they were bringing abortions to the black churches, and they were, and the black the evangelicals were going to the black church and says, "Do you really want abortion? This is murder." So a lot of black churchgoers and more black people voted for Trump than you probably would think about.
I suppose so, if they fell for that line about 9 month old babies having their heads bashed in.
Yeah. So, and, you know, and about abortion. So they're thinking, because one reason why they had abortions and not women not going through them because of poverty. I mean, and do you want your child to grow up in poverty? Just like during the slavery times, did a lot of slaves kill their own children because they didn't want to grow up being a slave, you know?
Well, of course, I should probably point out here that most abortions are done before 3 months, and most of the aborted fetuses are approximately the size of a flea.
Hmm. Okay. But anyway, that was my mostly about what's going on in Venezuela. You know, hopefully the Pope will step in and say something.
That was an interesting call. Thank you very much. Well, actually, I just pulled up Pope in Venezuela on the news roll, and what I come up with is Pope Francis said on Sunday he feared bloodshed in Venezuela, but that it was premature for him to take sides because it could cause more damage. So I guess he's on the fence on that one. And I have time just for a few seconds with the last caller. And hi, Ike, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, Trish, we were cut off earlier.
Oh.
Well, I got cut off when I was going to say I think our democracy is in the process of being altered. We're so dysfunctional, it's really not a democracy anymore. The only thing left, you know, is that something's going to change in our democracy, and it's not going to be for the better unless everybody, if at least 80, 50%, some kind of better percentage turn out and vote, they're just going to continue to thumb their noses at us.
So more participation.
I really believe it, and we're going to lose the whole thing unless people get involved, and I mean seriously in numbers and now.
Okay, well, thank you for that, Mike, and you get to be the last word.
Okay,
buddy. You've been listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland and other frequencies in Cascadia, and via KBOO.fm to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor A Holding Tank, a one-act comedy drama on Sunday, February 3rd from noon to 2 p.m. at Hip Bone Studios in Portland. A Holding Tank, a one-act comedy drama, presents one-act plays filled with drama and comic relief by emerging female playwrights on the Portland scene. This night features the plays Wild Bill, A Holding Tank, and Staged Reading, addressing issues surrounding suicide and mental health. Again, that's A Holding Tank, a one-act comedy drama on Sunday, February 3rd, from noon to 2 p.m. at Hip Bone Studios, 1847 East Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Musicians in Mexico City on Wednesday, February 6th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Musicians in Mexico City is a night of experimental music hosted by Buenas Intenciones. The event features guitar improvisation and abstract versions of traditional American and Mexican songs. There will also be a talk by editors of Músicos en la Ciudad de México. Again, that's Musicians in Mexico City on Wednesday, February 6th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.